It is now time for Mental Health Matters, brought to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tears apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together.
A message from Sagicor.
50 minutes after 3 o'clock, we say good afternoon to our host, Tessa Chatterton Shaw. Good afternoon, ma'am. How are you doing today?
Hi, Oliver. Always great to see you.
Same here, ma'am.
Are you cold in the studio?
It's a little chilly. Yes, it is.
I could tell.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Anyway, let's get straight into the program. I am delighted to have two guests from an organization which I worked with from inception, way back in 1996. I know Troy Wickham very well, but I don't know Mosiah. So Mosiah, welcome. So essentially today, what we're looking at is the correlation between substance abuse and mental health. You know, it could be a chicken or egg syndrome. One can lead to the other. So I have a number of questions. So today we're looking really at, as I said, the impact of substance abuse on mental health. And, you know, I know I have two very distinguished guests. So let me first introduce Troy. Now, Troy, I can't read all of this. We've been here all afternoon. So I'm going to get straight to the point. You have been an e-tutor at the University of West Indies Open Campus. You lectured at the Regional Police Training Center. So I know you in your former life as a police officer, working with the drug squad, not so?
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, Barbados. Good evening, VOB country. Good evening, Tessa. Yes, that is so correct.
Right. And I forgot to welcome all Barbadians here and across the world. Thank you for your feedback. It really has been phenomenal. So Troy, you were a lecturer at the Regional Police Training Center, security coordinator for the U.S. Embassy, which covered Barbados, the Eastern Caribbean, and the OECS, a detective constable, and I could go on and go on, an intelligence officer. You know your stuff. You know both from what we call the demand reduction side and the supply reduction side. So as Deputy Manager Troy, tell us about the mandate of the National Council on Substance Abuse. What is the role of the organization?
Okay, fine, Tessa. Yes, I can say that I have a vast experience as it relates to, I can say, drug matters, having been a police officer for close to 20 years. Now I'm here with the NCSA, going 4 years. I can say that the mandate of the NCSA, first, let me give you a background of the NCSA. The National Council on Substance Abuse was established by Act of Parliament way back in 1995. It's a statutory board, and it falls on the aegis of the Ministry of Home Affairs, then now the Ministry of Home Affairs and Information. Oversight and policy are determined by what we call the Board of Directors. Our mandate is simple, quite simple, and they say drug demand reduction. And this involves, I can say, all matters as it relates to addressing any issues relating to substance abuse or substance use, and the effects from persons from infancy through right up to adulthood. We also, I can say, we are involved in the first instance prevention. Right. Then we go right up to treatment and rehabilitation, which involves, obviously, our counseling program. I can say we have, this becomes operationalized, by which we have broken it down into what I can say four categories. And it starts with what I call research and information. And we conduct what we call local research, qualitative and quantitative research, sometimes what we call a mixed method in academia, where we actually collect information on the local drug situation. This information is used to guide our programming, our drug education, as well as to inform policy decisions at the ministerial level. Then we have what we call school-based interventions, where we actually go into the schools, our substance abuse prevention officers actually go into schools, give drug information, drug education. Then we go into the community, what we call community-based interventions, where we actually go into the community and deliver drug education to various interest groups, faith-based organizations, community groups, sporting groups, et cetera. And then again, our treatment and rehabilitation, where we have a counseling department here, highly qualified staff. I must say we have highly qualified staff here. The counselors are well qualified. We have a trainer of a trainer, or senior counselor. So we are equipped to assist Barbadians on all matters related to substance use and abuse.
Okay, Mutsa, I'm going to introduce you when I get to you, but still, you know, feel free to jump in if need be. So, Troy, let's get straight to the heart of the matter. Why are drugs and alcohol, and I emphasize alcohol, why are they problematic?
Interesting question, Tessa, I must say. First, let me say, problematic drug use tends to refer to what we call either dependency or recreational use. Person must understand that. In other words, it's not necessarily the frequency of use. So some person may sit here, the terminology, what we call problematic drug use, but it does not correlate with what I see as the frequency of the use of the person actually using the drugs. However, it deals with the effects drug taking have on the user and his or her life. And there may be experiences, social experiences, financial experiences, psychological experiences, physical experiences, or when you come in contact with what we call the long arm of the law. And that is what I call problematic drug use or problematic drug use. So it stems to, as I say, when persons, the effects have on the society at large, then that's when drug use becomes problematic.
Negative effects. Given the NCS's long history, which is probably approaching 25 years, could be longer, do you think Barbadians in particular understand that alcohol is a drug and it has harmful effects on the body, on the brain, on behavior, on the family, and on the wider society?
Yes, ma'am. Let me say that we at the NCSA see alcohol as a drug. And that's why we tend to say alcohol and other drugs, or AOD. And alcohol actually has, the wider public does not really recognize alcohol as a drug. Based on access, ease of access, but anything that alters the mind is classified as a drug. Alcohol alters the mind. We have seen persons negatively impacted by the use or abuse of alcohol. It has negatively impacted families, persons working relationship, productivity at work, productivity in the community. So therefore, persons must recognize alcohol as a drug. For us, our recently concluded BARDIN, Drug Information Network report, still identify alcohol as one of the major drugs persons are seeking treatment for, and also linked to problematic use. So yes, it's important that persons understand the harms and dangers associated with alcohol consumption.
Do you, Mosiah, you might want to jump in here too. Let me just say that Mosiah, it's nice to meet you. You're a counselor with the NCSA, you're trained and qualified social worker. You have earned a Bachelor of Science degree in social work with honors from UWE. And you have been an educator for 12 years, working predominantly with at-risk populations. So COVID has had a severe impact on our lives and on our mental health. Have you all seen any changes in terms of an increase in drug usage, whether that's legal or illegal drugs or other drugs, with all the paranoia and fear and anxiety facing our society?
To say that there's been an increase, I can't speak specifically to statistics to support that. Troy, I don't know if you can, but I can say that there are persons who have used, and our younger population as well, have predominantly used because there's a lack of supervision. There's online school and parents may not always be there. So where there's no supervision, I mean, curiosity abounds. So there has been some increase in use. And even persons working from at home, because working online can be pretty stressful, just as stressful as being on the physical plan. And because some persons don't have enough coping skills to manage, essentially some turn to drugs, turn to alcohol, which is socially acceptable. So as you were talking about alcohol before, the problem is that it's so socially acceptable and so easily accessible that persons would use as a way of coping with stress. So there has been some increased testing.
Okay.
Tessa.
Yeah, go ahead, Troy.
To add to what Mosa just said, really, as you may know, persons use substances to feel good. Some persons use substances because of social pressure, as Mosa said, because of curiosity, and COVID and stress as well, to alleviate some stress. COVID, we have seen what we call a slight increase as it relates to persons reaching out to the NCSA for assistance, especially at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. We at the NCSA, like any good organization, we took that opportunity to retool and what to build capacity in-house. And with that being said, we made ourselves available with use of online as well as use of telephone. Persons have been reaching out to us ever since then for counseling on various matters, not only as it relates to substance abuse matters, but other lifestyle matters in terms of addictions such as gambling, etc. So we made ourselves current. And also, it's important to note that regional studies, Jamaica conducted a study the findings actually show that there was an increase of substance use and abuse in Jamaica. However, certain parts of North America actually saw a decrease in use of certain substances. And a lot of it was obviously can be correlated directly to what I call accessibility, the ease of access, which is a major influencer for persons actually seeking to abuse or use substances.
Right. Now, I don't think there are many categories of drugs and classification of drugs. And I think it's important to break it down. And so I want you to talk to me about briefly, quickly, because this hour goes really fast. The difference between legal drugs, prescribed drugs, over-the-counter drugs, the illegal drugs. We now have something, a new trend called lean. And there's this new category called new psychoactive substances, which I don't think are classified or categorized yet by the International Narcotics Control Board or the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime.
Okay, fine. I will seek to answer that question. As it relates to the classifications for drugs, depressants, let me start with depressants, which is one of the most commonly used substances or drugs worldwide. They're commonly known as what we call downers. Depressants creates feelings of relaxation and tiredness. There are drugs that are legitimately used in the fight against mental illness, and this is important, and sleep deprivation. So persons usually use what we call depressants, classified depressants, for to assist them with mental health issues and sleep deprivation. However,
antidepressants.
Yes, antidepressants. You're correct, ma'am. You're correct. Thank you. After using these drugs, though, it creates a feeling of a euphoria. they can be highly addictive. An example of these drugs are alcohol, opiates, and barbiturates. So alcohol is classified as a depressant. So it's important for us to note that. And as I say, it's one of the most commonly used drugs locally because it's legal. And legal drugs are, especially in Barbados, are drugs that are not controlled by legislation. Simple. The simple way. Drugs are not really controlled by legislation. And however, let me say that some drugs, depending on the location, the use, can become illegal that are legal drugs. And let me explain. Some pharmacists, as you know, the Barbados Drug Service is responsible for policing pharmaceuticals in Barbados. And some drugs such as morphine, et cetera, are controlled substances.
Yeah.
And there must there are strict registers and guidelines on how pharmacists are to actually use or dispense morphine. So then if this is not done correctly, you know, which aligns with the guidelines spelled out in the law, then it becomes a legal substance. So it's important for personal data to understand this. I will move on now to illegal drugs. I spoke a bit about illegal drugs just now. Stimulants. Stimulants are drugs that basically increase one person's energy and concentration. It gives person what we call a boost.
Yeah.
A commonly used stimulant is cocaine.
Yeah.
Cocaine and methamphetamines. There are stimulants. We go into hallucinogens, and these are drugs basically that person actually inhale or use. We use terms like tripping. It makes a person feel like they're tripping, they're losing their mind. And it's important for persons to understand this. As it relates to over-the-counter drugs, there are drugs that can be sold directly before any prescription. For instance, various painkillers, drugs for colds, diarrhea, constipation.
Especially those with codeine now.
Exactly. I never get around to that shortly. codeine. And now, what I call the new phenomena, new psychotic substances. And these are substances that are new narcotics, or psychotropic drugs in pure form or preparation. And these drugs are not controlled by the 1961 United Nations Single Convention or the Narcotic Drug or 1971 United Nations Convention on Psychotropic Substances. And these substances, as I say, they're new. Persons actually can take old synthetic substances like synthetic cannabis, change one or two of the chemical components, and it become what we call a legal high. They're not controlled by any legislation. Or it can be old drugs that can be newly misused. And let me give an example of this. A few years ago, while I was a police officer, there was some anecdotal information reaching my department that persons were actually using what we call embalming fuel on marijuana. And that can be classified as a new psychotic substance because it's an old drug being newly misused. So I hope this shed some light on the situation and various classifications as it relates to drugs and the classifications.
Certainly. Before I go to, as you mentioned, Alba, embalming fluid, a lot of people who smoke regular cigarettes may not be aware that embalming fluid is one of the ingredients in a regular cigarette. In fact, if people knew the number of chemicals in a regular cigarette, they would really think twice.
Agreed. Agreed. There's several, I think, over 100 chemicals which actually make up a cigarette can be corrected. However,
toluene.
And they're very, very dangerous chemicals. Very dangerous chemicals. And actually, secondhand smoke and the residue from tobacco or cigarettes actually damage the environment, causes corrosion in the earth. they smoke the cigarette butts, etc. So persons are harming themselves when actually smoking cigarettes. We have seen what we call a steady decline in the traditional cigarettes, tobacco cigarettes, but persons are now what? Vaping. That's a new trend. Vaping is a new trend. Young persons are vaping. It seems to be what we call in Belgian parlance trending.
Yeah.
Trending is a trending thing where young persons are actually going to these vaping shops, pay lots of money for the vaping devices and the liquids. Some of them, these manufacturing companies are using creative ways to attract young persons to engage in such activities by having what we call flavored substances, like bubble gum, candy, ice cream flavors that can have sweet smells that can actually attract young persons who can engage in this activity from an early age. So they have lifelong users.
I need to stop you because Oliver has to pay the bills.
Okay, sorry.
Well, we know people are really paying attention to this program, so I myself am looking forward to hearing what Troy and Messiah have to say. Coming up right after this, because Mental Health Matters is brought to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tears apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together. Let's find you meaning. Where there is hope, keep on believing. Keep on.
A message from Sagicor.
And we return to Tessa, Troy, and Mosiah.
So, Mosiah, I want to ask you a question. As we approach summer and crop over, what are the signs and symptoms that parents should look for, especially during the preteen and the adolescent stage?
That's another question, Tessa. And I think that one important thing we should note is you have to know your children to know what is normal. You have to be involved and be consistently involved as well. So if you are then any difference you're able to pick up on, let's not think that every sign or symptom immediately says that it's drug use or that there's addiction. But parents look out for these things. Is there a decline in what they love to do? A loss of interest in things that they enjoy. He was a good footballer. He goes to football every time there's training. All of a sudden, there's a difference. He no longer is interested in going. She loves dancing, but there's a change. Is there a decrease in the achievement at school? Loss in decreasing grades? That's a sign that there could possibly be use happening. What about how they respond to authority? All right, there's a significant challenge with authority. So you're seeing more aggression. They're more irritable. These could definitely be signs. They may be zoned out. So you see the child there, but they're less than coherent. Those are signs that parents could look out for. Obviously, they're the signs for marijuana. You may see the eyes being red, you may realize the increase in appetite. If they're being avoidant, if they're being secretive, changing location often, not wanting to be in your presence, being very withdrawn, these are signs that drug use could possibly be a presenting challenge for young people.
What do you have to say about parents who use drugs in front of their children?
The children are seeing.
Let's face it.
Yeah, the children are seeing, and because they're seeing it, they think that this is normal. They think that it's okay. So then you come down with a heavy hammer on the child who may get involved in smoking marijuana, but you have been there smoking it in front of them for some time. They're aware. They smell, they can tell. They see the change in behavior, the alcohol use. They're seeing it. So immediately they think this is socially acceptable. If daddy's doing it, if mommy's doing it, then it's okay if I'm doing it. So that parents ought to be conscious of the example that they're setting for the young children. Our children see, and because they are still finding themselves in the adolescent stage, whatever seems, Troy was saying, trending, whatever seems interesting or new and exciting, And especially if they're seeing it in the home, they'd follow. So parents, you set the example, you set the trend. So be mindful what you're doing in front of or in front of the children. They're aware.
I really do think that the time has come to establish a national parenting program
that is
perhaps mandatory.
I agree, Tessa.
From the point of conception or when that pregnant mother goes to her family doctor or her OBGYN.
For her regular checkup. I really believe
we have so many problems in this society that people just have no clue that parenting is serious business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, Mosiah, I'm going to come back to Troy, but I want to ask you this question.
Sure.
What is the typical profile of a client presenting to you? I mean, you might have a range of, age groups, but what started this problem and what is it a typical profile like?
Good question, because we do have a range, but the typical client coming before me at the NCSA is the adolescent male, that 15 to 19 age group, or even young adult males. They are presenting to us at the National Council on Substance Abuse, and not just presenting because they were a concerned parent. There are concerned parents who call and say, look, I need help. I saw him. I saw a scissors. I saw some Fanta. I want to know what's happening. There are those who have run afoul of the law. So because they're in the court system, they refer to us. They might have been suspended from school. All right. So because they're suspended, they go to the Edna Nichols Center. And because Edna Nichols does mandatory drug testing, then parents may not be aware then, that there was substance use, but that brings it to the fore, or unless there's admittance that there's actual use. So very often we're seeing the adolescent male who is engaging in deviant behavior. And because of that, there's a discovery that substance use is a part of their lifestyle. So that would be the typical client that we're seeing, deviant behaviors and young men, 15 to 19.
What about parents being unable to cope?
Yeah.
And drug use impacting, I want to keep it focused on mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because, only a few weeks ago, I heard about someone who is a serious alcoholic, and it was impacting his wife's, his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He was so aggressive, he had to be restrained at the QEH, and it was impacting his wife and their children. And so, I mean, this pattern of drug use, whether it's legal or illegal, has ripple effects on various aspects of our lives.
And I think that is something that persons need to be aware of. It just doesn't affect the individual who's using. The family is affected. So from the time the family is affected, that means that a child is affected. It goes into the school, and then we see a child who is achieving or showing up with some behaviors that are deviant. Then we can see that the use in the family not only affects that man or affects that woman, but affects the community. It affects our society at large. And because then you're not able to, have meaningful relationships, because when we talk about mental health, we want that persons are able to manage the emotions positive, even if they have positive or negative experience, that they're able to manage those emotions and they're able to form meaningful relationships, and be, I want to say, committed citizens or good citizens of the country. So when we have substance use in the mix that can create mental health challenges, then that creates a problem. Mental health could have been the start of it. You might have been predisposed to a mental health challenge because of family history.
Go ahead, what you're saying that an individual might have might have depression, and it mm-hmm. might be latent, mm-hmm. and they might not know of it,
mm-hmm.
but the drugs will bring it to the fore.
It would, or they were using to manage a stressful situation or a traumatic situation, and because of the increased use and the increased use of drugs, then that creates a mental health challenge as well. So it could be from either angle. It could have been latent, and the drug exacerbates the challenge, or in a matter of trying to cope with the situation, then it produces a mental health challenge or a substance use disorder.
All right. Troy, I got a difficult one to throw at you, but I can't help but throw it. You can be as diplomatic as you want to be. The government of Barbados established something called the Medical Cannabis Licensing Authority, which supports the medicinal use of marijuana. Your mandate is clearly prevention, as you said at the outset. It discourages the use of illegal drugs, and you know, I just want to know how are we gonna navigate this? Because it's my personal opinion. This is my personal opinion that the messages have not been clear in terms of what is medicinal, what is recreational. And we know all the harmful effects of marijuana. We know the different, the toxicity levels of different strains of marijuana. How are we going to navigate these two tracks, so to speak? One that is supposed to bring economic benefits, but I have not heard any clear messaging about the two issues. You get my point?
Yes, I do. As you said, it's a fair question, obviously coming from the public of Barbados, including yourself, as it relates to the NCSA's position on this matter. Let me start by saying the NCSA mandate is clear, as you outlined. We look at prevention. However, the government of Barbados, well before the Medicinal Cannabis Act was actually passed in Parliament, we submitted a position paper, which actually spoke to drug education, which outlined the harms associated with cannabis use. So it's important for us here at the NCSA to keep educating Barbados on the harms associated with marijuana use. There's a clear separation, as if for all persons to know, they can feel free to go to the Barbados Parliament website, download the Medicinal Cannabis App, which clearly set out guidelines for the use of medicinal cannabis, which will be strictly policed by the Cannabis Authority, Medicinal Cannabis Authority. Strictly policed. There are clear guidelines, Ms. Tessa, clear guidelines, and as well for sacramental use, because the government of Barbados set out the app to speak to religious use, using a marijuana for religious purpose, how it should be used going forward. So we at the NCSA will continue to educate persons, our various publics, as it relates to the harms associated with cannabis use, how addictive it can be, especially for young developing minds, adolescents, youth. So it's important for us to keep spreading the word, reaching persons where they're at, in terms of the schools, on social media, traditional media, like the news, television, et cetera. We will make our voices be heard loud and clear across those publics.
So let me ask you this. Do you all have a formal relationship with the Barbados Cannabis Licensing Authority? Like, do you all talk about, okay, we're going down two separate tracks here, you know, and because I think that the average young person is confused, that they might think, well, this gives me license to use, to free up, you know, and now, I mean, even if you read court cases, you know, the accused person is saying, oh, I'm using it for my asthma, I'm using it for this and for that, and I'm using it for medicinal purposes.
Okay, fine. Yes, we have a relationship with the Medicinal Cannabis Licensing Authority. We have held several meetings to discuss various concerns. So we have a relationship with them. I must say, Tessa, that they recently amended Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act, which speaks to the control of all substances in Barbados, which includes cannabis, has been recently amended to speak to if persons under the age of 18 is caught with 14 grams or less of marijuana, they will receive a ticket and they have to attend the NCSA. This is compulsory for counseling, and no conviction will be recorded against them after the counseling has been completed.
So they will be sent to Mosiah.
To Mosiah for counseling, yes.
Please. If they are caught with, you said less than?
14 grams. 14 grams or less.
14 grams or less.
Yes, please.
So what if I'm a 21-year-old and I have 25 grams of marijuana?
Well, if you are 25, it's not compulsory for a person over the age of 18. The counseling, let me say, you'll be given a ticket as well for 14 grams or less if you're 21. But if you have over 25 grams, if you have 25 grams or over 14 grams, the act, the Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act, speaks to 15 grams. When you have 15 grams of cannabis, you're deemed to have a trafficable quantity.
Wow.
And with that, you will have an additional charge of intent to supply drugs as well, the cannabis. Right. So but that follows as well. So then, the law is clear.
Yeah, but I got another question that always troubles me. Some countries have given, as you said, permission to have 14 grams per person and maybe 5 plants per household. Who monitors that? Who monitors that? And can I have 14 grams 5 times a day? And if I live in a household with 5 people, does it mean that the 5 of us can each have 5 plants? I mean, I see some loopholes. I got to be honest. I got to be frank.
Fine. We will continue our education, as I say. We will continue.
But you get my point.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Like most things, there's always the opportunity for amendments, for improvement as time progress. But let's see how it goes in the initial stages. We will conduct, after a number of years, a survey, which will focus on the recently amended legislation sometime in the future, and we will let the science guide us.
All right. So you handled that very tactfully. But I think you understand where I'm coming from. Mosiah, I want to ask a question in relation to, for the public's benefit. What are the risk factors that face young people, and what are the protective factors? And it is true to say that there are parents who have done all the right things. They have been there. They have attended PTA meetings. They have been supportive. They have been loving. They have been, you know, I don't want to say shower, you know, I believe in delayed gratification as opposed to instant gratification. But generally speaking, what are the risk factors and what are the protective factors?
Thanks,
Troy, I'll come back to you after.
I know you said that there are parents out there who are doing as much as they possibly can, but there's another set of persons out there who are willing to capture the minds of the young person by any means necessary. So what risk exists? Ease of access. In the communities, there's easy access to buying substances, purchasing alcohol, even though by law it's controlled, there is ease of access. Have children in primary school who go and purchase marijuana. So the ease of access in communities, that is a definite risk, because if children can so easily get their hand on a drug, and sometimes it's out of curiosity, sometimes it's out of seeing another friend using, curiosity, or seeing it in the family, because it's so easily accessible, that creates a challenge. Also, I'd say low educational achievement is also another risk that presents itself, because we find children who are not engaged or who are not achieving academically tend to lean towards deviant behavior, and substance use and abuse is a part of that deviant behavior. So if a child is not achieving, and I'm not saying that the child has to be the most intelligent, but whatever they're good at, they ought to feel as if they can achieve and contribute meaningfully. So if that is not happening, then there's the risk of being involved in substance use and abuse, and also the very real risk of family history. I don't think we can leave that out, because you did mention, Tessa, about parents using in front of the child. So if there's a history of addiction in the family, then there is that high risk that that type of behavior will continue in the generations to come.
So you're talking about genetics.
Genetics, yes. The genetics or the makeup of the human being, that is a risk as well. And it depends on how high, I think, how it depends on what the risk are, or how high the risk are that could influence if there's a negative outcome for a young person who uses a substance. No, yeah. Go ahead. You had a question.
I know Oliver wants to play an ad soon, but I want you to speak to poverty versus wealth and how those can be risk factors.
Yes. So poverty, then, we have young persons who, because there isn't money, there isn't enough finances in the household, someone tells them, you can make a quick dollar here. Go ahead. So because you can make a quick dollar, you get involved in something that you don't want to be involved in, but it brings in money. It puts food on the table. And let's not take for granted, sometimes our 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds are feeding households. So because they're involved in these behaviors, because they're poor, because they have to look for some means of eating, as simple thing as that, then that presents a great risk. And then wealth also means that there's more, that you have more money, so you have easy access to it. And that means you could probably choose a drug like cocaine. You just want to stick to the alcohol or the marijuana, you may go for cocaine. So that's right. Too is a risk.
All right, let's let Oliver do his thing.
3 minutes before 4, and Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes I think that tear us apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together. Whether it's life, let's keep on dreaming. Whether it's love, let's find you meaning. Whether it's hope, keep on believing. Keep on.
A message from Sagicor.
And we are back with Tessa, Troy Wickham, and Mosiah Hoyt.
Right. So Mosiah, you're talking about, Oliver, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Someone wants to call in, but I'm not sure what the number is.
434-1790. 434-1790. And for WhatsApp, let me give you the number in case you want to send a message. Bear with me one moment. The number for WhatsApp is 2664862. 2664862 for your messages on WhatsApp. And to give us a call, it's 434-1790.
Okay. So, Mosiah, you know, I'm mindful of the time. Let's talk about protective factors. Mm. What are those things that really, and it's interesting that you said the typical profile is an adolescent male. I remember once reading that boys who reach the age of, let's say, 18, 19, and that they need a the presence of a male figure in their lives, whether that is a father, an uncle, a godfather, that boys in particular need that presence, and that if they reach age 18, 19 without drug taking behavior, without coming into conflict with the law, without, you know, truancy, that invariably they will reach adulthood and be fine. It must have something to do with the fact that women are more nurturing and more, I don't know, but I know we do have problems with young women as well. A lot of young women with problems. But what would you say are some of the protective factors?
Education is a powerful protective factor. I think that getting the information out there to our young people by any means necessary, meet them where they're at, online or in the schools, as programs that we have at the NCSA, education is powerful. So once we educate our young people, we give them the opportunity then to make better decisions, because they know of the challenges or the potential challenges of using substances. So if we educate from our nursery up to secondary school and on, we have a better chance of decreasing use with our young people. Parental involvement. Tess, you mentioned having a male figure involved in the family, and that is so true. I see. Okay, yes. So mentorship is so important. I think that mentorship is so important. If there's a male who is present, making sure that, or a father who is present, I should say, making sure that there's a male who can positively influence that young man is important. Because I hear women say, you know, I've mothered and fathered him. And I mean, technically you can't, a woman can't be a father. She can try her best and give her all as a parent, but she can't be a father. So having a male there is very important, not just for boys, you know, but for female, for girls as well. And I think academic achievement is also a protective factor. If we have a system that allows our boys, allows our girls to thrive in the classroom, in their particular giftings, then the likelihood for them being involved in deviant behavior is significantly decreased.
You have to unmute your mic, Tessa.
Sorry. Do we have a caller?
Yes, ma'am, we do. Good afternoon. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. You're live on the air.
Good afternoon to the lady and gentleman. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I get to say something now that a lot of people might be stuck on what I'm going to say. But I don't believe in no medical marijuana. It causes cancer. It causes mental health. I see the news when it's not money. And then they let all the money, they might have to fix a heart attack really out. They might have to fix another thing in St. Lucie. So I do not believe in any medical organism. And what you send the challenge to us, do all we can do. But then, and then they see the children fall into this thing. And then it leads on to bigger things. And I don't believe in it. I will never believe in it, because I know what it can do. And anybody that has anything or anybody, then will know that it can destroy. It might start, it might not kill each. It might start you from vomiting if you have cancer, but you do become addicted to it. That is all I have to say. Have a good evening.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much for your call.
Good evening.
Is there another caller?
Not at this time, not yet.
Yeah, I believe the caller was speaking about medicinal cannabis. I'm not sure. I know of someone who in the late stages of her cancer was given CBD drops and also THC drops on her tongue, and all it did is heavily sedate her, and I did not see any positive outcome. In fact, she passed in November 2020. I still think that we need to pay attention to the science, and as Troy said, and it may work for some in the early stages of the detection of a chronic illness, whether that's glaucoma or multiple sclerosis or certain neurological diseases. But this individual just went downhill very rapidly. Let me ask you this. How have you all been able to pivot in this COVID-19 pandemic in terms of reaching the public? Because I'm sure it cannot be the same in terms of going out to community centers, to schools. Schools have been online in the last 2 years. Sometimes I'm not sure who's in school and who isn't, because I no longer have school-age children. But how have you all been able to reinvent yourselves, Troy?
Okay, fine. Thanks. Thanks for the question. The NCSA, I can say the staff at the NCSA, they're wonderful. They responded to the challenge of the COVID-19 pandemic, where we were not able to conduct our interventions face-to-face. We acquired a number of what I call software tools to assist us with our drug education. And we now have a program we call Drug Education Through Technology. This particular program, we utilize software tools such as Nearpod, which is a great help to us here at the council. We utilize that software tool to deliver drug education in schools.
You need to teach me about that, because I saw a little taste of it.
Very, very good tool.
Had never heard of it.
Nearpod is a very good tool. It is activity-based software tool where participants are allowed to actually conduct activities while learning information or grasping concepts. We have a software tool called PictoChart, where we're allowed to create what we call infographics to give persons snapshots of reports, findings, such as the Barden report, etc. So we utilize Zoom a lot to conduct webinars, where we are now able to reach persons as far as Europe when conducting our webinars. So we have reinvented ourselves and made ourselves more relevant in the area of drug education. And we actually conducted a survey to utilizing a software tool where we conducted the survey completely online from our desk. You conducted a survey
completely online.
Yes, ma'am. Using a software tool called Question Pro.
What was your target population?
It was what I call a needs assessment with the members of the Ministry of Home Affairs and Information, the various departments. We conducted a workplace survey to inform all workplace drug education. Hopefully we're releasing those findings soon.
Okay. That's interesting. Tell us about your linkages with regional and international organizations. How have these benefited you? And obviously travel must have been curtailed to some extent. But how is Barbados benefiting from these international linkages? I know about the OASC CAD, there's COPALAD.
Yes, let me say that we have, since the onset of COVID, we have benefited tremendously. As you know, there's a cost attached to travel. I can say several of our officers, that's substance abuse prevention officers, our research person from our research department, was able to attend several webinars and training exercises during COVID with the use of online platforms such as Teams, such as Zoom, etc. And we have benefited from training and technical assistance from CARICOM.
Yeah.
The Drug Demand Reduction Secretariat. We also have also benefited from the international organizations such as UNODC, United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, especially again the technical assistance. They assist us tremendously before early warning system. Back in 2020, we held a number of seminars actually which focused on new psychiatric substances. The UNODC played a major part in that. They also visited the island back in 2019, conducted training as it relates to new psychiatric substances at the Regional Police Training Center. We were the focal agency responsible for hosting that event, the NCSA. As you just mentioned, the Inter-American Drug Abuse Control Commission, OAS, that's the Organization of American States, and the Spanish acronym is CCAT. They have assisted us.
Tú hablas español, ¿verdad?
Sí, sí. Hablo español.
Bueno.
Yes, ma'am. They have assisted us financially. They also gave us technical assistance as it relates to several of our research projects. We are planning to actually start our secondary school survey come September. And the OASC CAD will assist us with technically. They are responsible for the evaluation tool, the instrument. We are also part of the multilateral evaluation, which is the MEM.
Right.
We are the NCE. We collect basically data from what we call demand reduction sectors, as well as supply control. It's in its eighth round.
I was just about to ask that because I checked the most recent Barbados report. Just let me explain for the members of the public, and this might be a little boring, but it's very important that, you know, Barbados does submit data and information from a wide range of agencies who work in various aspects of drug control, whether that's data from prevention entities, NGOs, the police, customs. Am I correct, Joy?
Yes, you are. You're totally correct.
And a report is an evaluation of the progress of drug control is produced every 2 to 3 years.
Yes, every 2 years. Yes, you're correct. As I say, we are the NCE as it relates to collecting data from the, as you say, the demand reduction, which we actually focus on treatment facilities. As well, this data is used basically to inform policy hemispherically. Right. Where we all throughout the hemisphere, we'll be singing from the same hymn sheet. It's always important to know what your neighbor is doing as it relates to drugs. As drugs is a fast-paced industry, things are constantly changing. As I say, there have been reports from the UNODC that there have been reports of over 950 new psychiatric substances. So it's important for us locally to have that information so that it will be totally foreign to us. So mechanisms such as the MEM is vital against the fight against substance abuse.
Yeah, from recently I was privy to a report that said that drug traffickers had found a new method of trafficking, and that was through courier services and the postal services, and not so much planes and vessels. Correct?
Yes. Based on our recent BARDA reports, a number of seizures were actually found in, as you say, courier services. Express courier services, persons tend to utilize those methods. But like most things, as I said, the drug industry is constantly changing. Persons are always looking for ways to beat law enforcement, to outfox law enforcement, and they must stay on top. So that's why information sharing is very important, as well as training and technical assistance.
Okay, so I want to give you all the last word. Oliver, I sent you my song.
I shall look for it, ma'am.
I feel good by Barry Salmon. Okay. To take us out.
Well, we're running out of time, so let's take a word from our sponsors, who we really must say a special thanks to Sagicor Financial Corporation for coming on board onto Mental Health Matters. You really have done a great job by sponsoring
So I just wanted the guys to have a final say.
No problem. We have two more commercials. So I'm going to play one now. And then, as I said, at the very end of the show, I'll play the last ad for you. Great.
Thank you.
Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels the tears apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together. Sometimes the darkest tonight turns into a day so bright, leaving the scars and the pain, everything that we fear behind us. Where there is life, let's keep on dreaming. Where there is love, let's find you meaning. Where there is hope, keep on believing, keep on.
From Sagicor.
60 minutes after 4 o'clock as we rejoin Mr. Troy Wickham, Mr. Mosiah Hoyt, and of course our host, Tessa Chatterton Shaw.
So I want to give you guys the final words in terms of messages that you would like to send to the public based on all that you know from what you see in terms of clients, what you see from the research, whether that's local, regional, or international. So Troy, I'll start with you first.
Okay, thanks, Tessa. First, let me thank you for inviting the NCSA on your program, giving us the opportunity, basically, to share the message as it relates to substance abuse and drug demand reduction. I know that you, as the NCSA, continue to evolve based on the challenges that we are experiencing. I know you're fully aware. Having had the honor to manage this organization yourself,
It's in my heart.
Yes, please. And the rapid changes as it relates to substance use and abuse. It's a complex world, complex industry. The fact that substance use is becoming more socially accepted among various demographics. And it becoming more, criminal networks are becoming more sophisticated in drug trafficking. And it's important that we at the NCSA seek support from corporate Barbados. I would like corporate Barbados to get involved in the fight against substance use and abuse. I want persons to note that substance use and abuse is a mental health or public health issue.
Yeah.
It's not what we call a law enforcement issue that most persons see it as. It's not a law enforcement issue, it's a public health issue. And healthy citizens are productive citizens. And I want to thank all the persons who partner with the NCSA on various initiatives. I want to thank you, and I'm inviting corporate Barbados to come join the NCSA. I'll leave you with our numbers. You can feel free to contact us. We're here to help. Don't be a stranger. Our telephone number is 535-6272. We are on social media. Our website is www.ncsa.gov.bb. That's NCSA. www.ncsa.gov.bb. And we are on Instagram, we are on Facebook as well. Feel free to visit our page, our social media pages. We have loads of information. We have our research papers there as well. And call us. Reach out to us. We're here to help. We are here to help Barbados. So thank you, Ms. Shaw, for having us on your show. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah. I couldn't have these segments on substance abuse without inviting the government's National Drug Commission. So, Mosiah, parting words from you.
Troy just said healthy persons are productive citizens. And sometimes you need help. So I want us to normalize treatment, normalize counseling. Don't see it. Don't worry about the stigma attached. You need some help. We're here to help you. All right. The counseling department of the National Council on Substance Abuse. Reach out to us. 832-9120. 832-9121. We are here to help you, ma. So I just want us to, I want to leave with those words. The stigma attached. All right. I know you're concerned about confidentiality in Barbados. We are bound by confidentiality. We can keep your business private. Reach out to us for the help that you desire, because healthy persons, as Troy said, are productive citizens. Tessa, thank you for having me.
Messiah, that was a very important point you made, confidentiality in a small society. Many people just don't come forward because they feel that their business is going to be discussed. So I'm glad you ended on that note. Thank you so much, guys, and all the best. And enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I know your manager was listening. So I also need to say hello to Sir David Simmons, the architect of the 1995 NCSA Act 1995-13. Okay, so not all. Oliver, thank you. Next week, we look at treatment and rehabilitation from the perspective of Verdun and Marina House. Okay?
Thank you, Tessa. Have a lovely
good
week,
night, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Ollie.
Thank you.
Mental Health Matters came to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tears apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together. Sometimes the darkest night turns into a day so bright, leaving the scars and the pain.